I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. I'd like to welcome you to our third public forum on service to veterans. We've had two previous forums. The first in December we had on the homeless vet. The second in February we had on health care. Today we will concentrate on employment, education, and training. For some of you that don't know, the New York State Council of Veterans Organization represents 27 of the major veterans organizations with the support of the American Legion. And our idea for these forums is to gain knowledge through your statements what we could do to help the veteran and his family in our state. Our next forum will be on April the 23rd on mental health. At this time, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to present to you Mr. Robin Temple, Deputy Director of the New York Division of Veterans Affairs for Director John Behan. Mr. Temple, good morning.
I have 20 copies for you.
Thank
Sorry
you.
We didn't get them to you earlier. They were just
Thank you.
Printed up this morning.
Pass them around. Before we start, we have your statements. We would like to, if possible, to stay within 10 minutes. And this will give us plenty of time for us to ask questions and to you to give answers. We have the statements. I guarantee you that we will read those statements in full. And we appreciate it, just so that we could run within our time limit. Once again, I want to thank you for coming. Mr. Temple.
Thank you, Mr. DeMarco. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, advocates, friends. Thank you for the invitation to be here this morning. The New York State Division of Veterans Affairs wishes to thank the New York State Council of Veterans Organization legislative representatives for this opportunity to address employment, education, and training issues affecting the veterans of New York State. We involved in the business of veterans advocacy should realize that the single most important thing we can do for a returning veteran is to assist him or her in selecting gainful employment. While we as veterans were in service for 2, 4, or 20 years, our non-veteran service peers were advancing in their civilian careers. Employment and training issues, which I'd like to briefly address. In 1998, the state of New York passed the Veterans Bill of Rights. This ideology was well intended, but we have seen that those charged with delivering the events of this legislation were often thwarted by elements over which they had no control. The New York State Department of Labor has a cadre of DVOPs and LVERs assigned to service veterans. Unfortunately, they have been riddled by federal budget cuts and often are assigned duties other than serving veterans by their local managers. In 1994, the Veterans Bill of Rights for Employment and Training was passed. This legislation establishes a priority system for veterans to secure preference in being selected for employment and training programs administered by the state of New York. Unfortunately, this legislation has no teeth in it or procedures to require compliance. The Division of Veterans Affairs has proposed a bill that is current legislation, which would expand the law to include all state agencies with measures to ensure compliance. in educational issues, the division realizing that Vietnam Veterans Tuition Assistance Program has been far underutilized, we have endorsed a proposal to extend the benefit to Persian Gulf War veterans. The division also last year supported legislation which awards a $450 grant, an educational grant, for child of a deceased or seriously disabled veteran who is 40% or more service connected. The law read prior to this that the veteran had to be at least 50% service connected. In civil service, the division has proposed current legislation that would allow veterans who served in more than one war to receive points on a civil service exam. Briefly, an example would be a Vietnam veteran who was employed by the state prior to going in service and used his points to take an exam or for a promotion and came back home, returned to that job, and then may have been in the reserves and was called up for duty in the Persian Gulf. The current law says he cannot use those points again. So we're sponsoring legislation that would allow him or her to do that. Then we have the 55C program. Civil service law allows up to 300 positions. This threshold has unfortunately never been realized. For those employed under 55C, they are frequently the first ones to be let go in a budget cut or downsizing. State agencies, for whatever the reason, are reluctant to hire veterans under the 55C program. We would strongly support that that legislation also have some teeth put into it. And just to briefly summarize, I think we all need to remind ourselves just how important the veterans community of New York State is. Thank you, and I'm glad to entertain any questions you may have. John Behan sends his best. He is recuperating from torn rotator cuff surgery.
Okay. Any questions, Mike?
I have a question. Robin, what did, you mentioned a DVOP program and an LVER program. Do I understand you that it's being reduced across the board because of budget restraints or budget cuts?
I don't think it's currently being reduced right now. I know in the past they have, you know, been hit with severe budget cutbacks and restrictions. But I think the current levels are solid. But I, you know, I'm not 100% sure of that.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, Rick. I have a couple of things, Rob. The first is, you've had a chance to look at the legislative priorities of the council.
Correct.
Under employment and training, the council has recommended several things that address a number of points that you refer to in that the division refers to in their statement. First is, the council has backed a proposal to amend Chapter 553 to ensure that all agencies that have something to do with employment training, remediation, or rehabilitation are covered explicitly. In other words, listed in the law, number one, and number two, the proposal as it is now developed is to provide two forms of sanctions. One is that each agency must make a report each year to the director of the Division of Veterans Affairs, who must certify, along with the council to the governor, that they are substantially in compliance or they would not get their money for the next fiscal year for any purpose. Would you feel free in commenting on that, or is that the kind of sanction? Perhaps not that particular one, but others that that were meant in or implied?
Well, I personally agree with that legislation, and I'm rest assured that John Behan does too. If we don't have some teeth in this, we can't make these state agencies comply, and the bill as it stands now is well-intended, but it really doesn't do that much.
May I follow up on that?
Sure, sure.
A couple
go
of
ahead.
Questions. One is, I've seen the program bill for broadening out to all agencies, and that particular bill does not address what the council believes need to be done, nor the original intent of Chapter 553. I guess my question is it possible you could have somebody from the division either tomorrow or at the regular council meeting or at the next meeting in April join us, your counsel, and John, if he's back from his rehabilitation and spring training in Florida to get ready to get that rotator cuff pitching, to discuss what might, in fact, be a reasonable alternative to the current program bill that has been submitted to both houses of the legislature. Do you think that might be possible?
Very much so, yes. And I'm sure we can arrange that.
Last but not least is exactly the same kind of sanction where an agency would have to be certified as being substantially in compliance with the Constitution of the State of New York, which requires veterans' preference in hiring, promotion, retention, a certification by the division, and this is not an official position, but is this a type of sanction to ensure that veterans' preference in the workforce as opposed to the services delivery, in other words, the hiring of the workforce to actually do the state work, is that the type of sanction that the division would consider backing and or recommending to the governor, that the governor back?
I believe so. You know, John and I have talked about this, but he has made no ultimate decision, but I'm pretty sure we're leaning in that direction.
Thank you.
Well, I have a follow-on to
yeah, all right, you follow, you go ahead.
Robin, what is currently the policy as far as assessing the different departments as to whether or not they're in compliance? Is there anything?
We had a meeting with about 8 or 9 different state agencies in October, and they were pretty much in the dark about what this law required. So we educated them, you know, told them why we thought this was important, and they are currently cooperating, which was another thing that was very helpful was Assemblyman Tochi sent out a questionnaire to these same agencies, and a couple of them have called me and Rick and people like yourselves to try to find out what they're supposed to do. So I think the ball's rolling, and it looks like there is perhaps a light at the end of the tunnel here.
How long has this law been in effect?
It was passed when? 1994?
July 21, 1994.
We had a lot to do with that.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Robin, I have one, just one. I see that to extend the Vietnam Veterans Tuition Assistance to not alone the Vietnam veteran, but to extend it to the Persian Gulf veterans. In our thing, we have to make it for all wartime veterans in that period from Vietnam on. You remember, we have Grenada, we have
right.
Panama, and before long we'll have Bosnia.
Right.
I think that all wartime veterans should be included into that, not just specify uh-huh. Vietnam and Gulf War veterans. There's quite a few in between.
Right.
That's in our
right.
program. We would like to strongly covers all veterans.
Right. Well, I'm sure we can support legislation like that. Perhaps if the Persian Gulf Amendment flies this year, then next year we can seek to bring others on.
Robin, on behalf of the committee, Peter.
What stand is the division taking on once Montrose get up and running, the VA hospital in Montrose? Will the division be the forefront of pushing for veteran hiring at Montrose? Qualified positions, that is.
Well, we would certainly hope so. How do I say this? In this state, there's so many agencies involved. You have the SUNY involved with one home. You have the health department. You have the dormitory authority involved, which does some upfront funding. I'm not sure in the past how much input the division has had with hirings and but I would certainly hope that in the future with Montrose we would have some say. Hopefully there would be veterans hired as opposed to non-veterans whenever possible.
Just one follow-up.
Sure.
I think what Pete is alluding to is that the SUNY Stony Brook Veterans Home is a particularly egregious example because they did not list with the New York State Department of Labor. They refused to list any of the listings, and the overwhelming majority, like 90% of the people whom they hired, were non-veterans and qualified veterans. They couldn't even, the folks in Suffolk County couldn't even get them through the door.
Right.
If there were a long-term Veterans Healthcare Authority, which would help solve some other problems having to do with the state homes. Is it your belief and that of the director that this might help solve the problem in terms of veterans' preference in hiring at the state homes?
Definitely. We could certainly use the help from that entity. I know Director Behan has frequently commented to me that we as a division in the past have had little input with these state veterans' homes because of all the other agencies involved. However, when there's a problem, Mrs. Jones feels her husband's being ill-treated, then they come to the division, So we would certainly like to have more say in what goes on. And yes, to answer your question, we would strongly support the creation of that entity and work with it to make sure that these problems would be solved.
Thank you.
Betty?
I just want to ask one thing. It's a statement, it's not a question. Okay. I of course, spend a lot of time at the Donaldson Hall in St. Louis. My auxiliaries in Queens, we all support that. And I would like you to know that many of the veterans there who are clean and most long care important everywhere, they are off everything now and they're looking for something. They all stop us every time we come and say, can't you get us jobs? We'll take the hospital. We'd love to work in the hospitals because we're happy here. And they won't hire them.
It is a shame.
I mean, especially when they plead all the time. They're very sweet about it. They're all clean.
Well, we can be hopeful that this could possibly change in the future. A lot of these things don't cost money. We all know there isn't much money floating around, but I applaud your efforts of this committee for trying to do things that don't create a lot of money.
Yeah. Anyone else? Would you give your boss our best?
I will indeed. Preserved,
and thank him, and I thank you for your statement and your testimony.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next gentleman will be Mr. James T. Dillon, Executive Deputy Commissioner of New York State Department of Labor. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. President DeMarco, members of the council, thank you for inviting the Department of Labor to be here, and I'm pleased to represent them before you. I know that a representative of the Veterans Agency probably doesn't feel the need to establish their bona fides to be here before you, but I just want to let you know that I have a fairly long history. My father was a World War II veteran in the Army Air Corps. I was 6 years active duty myself in the Navy, and my son is a 1993 graduate of West Point, and he's currently stationed in Fort Carson in Colorado. My daughter is currently expecting a baby, and I hope she has a Marine. That way we'll have all the bases covered, and we'll see what happens in the future.
All of our member organizations have membership applications that you can pick up on your way out the door, Mr. Dillon.
Thank you. I handed out a statement that's in all the blue packets, and it touches on a wide variety of programs that the New York State Department of Labor currently or has in the near past run. I think our numbers pretty much speak for themselves. We probably deal with as many veterans directly as any agency in the state. I dare say quite a few more. The 155 DVOPs and leavers that currently work for the department provided services directly to over 57,000 veterans in just the first 8 months of the program year that we're in right now. At President DeMarco's request, I won't run down and give a laundry list. By the way, I worked in the legislature for 16 years. We held all of our conferences in this room, so I'm used to the telephone ringing during the middle of them. I won't run through all of them. I'm sure that everyone will read them. I'm sure that you will be impressed by the volume that we currently handle. What I would like to touch on, and I talked to Rick a little bit before we started here, is some of the pressures that right now are faced by departments such as ours. We are a federally funded department. The about 93% of our funding comes from the federal government. So we march to a different beat with regard to finances, with regard to budgets. That's why you never read the Department of Labor's name in the paper much at state budget time. We are affected by the federal budget. We have been dramatically affected by the federal budget over the last 10 years. This agency had over 12,000 employees a mere 11 years ago, and right now has 5,300. So it's also contributed to a rather elderly agency because of all the bumping that's taken place on account of that, all the layoffs and bumping that have taken place over the years. Matter of fact, it's one of the reasons I wanted to go there. I think it's the only agency in the state that the average age was older than me. So it seemed like a good place to go. I'd feel I could still feel young there. There are pressures today, pressures that have resulted in the main from budget cuts over the years, from budget cuts that we face. We had federal shutdowns. I know Jim Hartman's in the room. He can tell us all about the effect of the federal shutdown on his own operations. We managed to avoid that to some extent. We are also managing to avoid the for the time being anyway, the cuts that have come about as a result of the continuing resolutions that are keeping the federal government going right now. You're probably aware, you may not be, that some states either have already gone or on the brink of putting their DBOPs and leavers out of business. The formulas have been such that some states have faced up to 25% cuts in their veterans programs that are run by their labor departments. We have faced just under a 9% cut. This is money that we should recoup. If we don't, we don't. We have managed to divert other funds and have not made any cuts as a result of that. But I will point out that while there have been cuts, the cuts that have faced the veterans program in New York State are not nearly as dramatic as those that are faced by the overall employment and training program. The CETA is gone, long gone, way in the past. That's back when we had 12,000 people. JTPA is going. This year, next year, we don't know when, but it's going. We're looking at workforce development legislation in Congress, which is mirroring to some extent what's happening on the welfare side, and we're looking at a block grant scenario. The block grants, the cuts, these things are forcing us to do business in different ways. We're looking more toward technology. Some of you may be aware of the America's Job Bank, which is run out of the Department of Labor. We do it for all states. We do it on a contract with the U.S. Department of Labor. It puts job orders up on the internet. Maybe some of you saw the piece on it on Channel 13, I believe it was last week, regarding the person who had found their job through the AJB. We are currently in the top 10 internet hit numbers. In other words, the number of accesses per day on the internet, we are in the top 10 of all entities on the internet, and the other nine are all games. So it's quite a remarkable achievement, and there are 22 states that's all they use to list their job orders. In other words, that's the only technical means they use to list their job orders. There's presently being developed a talent bank, which will work in conjunction with the job bank, which will be a resume matching system to match resumes to job orders. The State Department of Labor has started their own system, which we call the Quick Link system, which I believe eventually the national model will in fact be modeled after. It's a complicated system. Everything that we're doing is complicated now. The cuts are going to affect everyone. The question is, how are we going to work collaboratively through this? I provided Rick with a copy of a document that we came out with earlier this month, a policy framework for New York's workforce development system. I think as he looks through this, he's going to find that the word that's used most in there is collaboration. collaboration among the state agencies, between state agencies and local governments, collaboration between community-based organizations, and it's going to require collaboration between interested parties. And that's going to mean that, in my opinion, we're all going to have to work together to make what we have now continue. I worked in the legislature for 16 years. I saw what happened when parties came to the table in disagreement. We always ended up with something neither of us wanted, or that any of them wanted. That's just the way it is. If we, and by we I mean the veterans groups, the other parties interested in employment and training, the SDA, the service delivery areas, the counties, the local social services offices, the community colleges, the state education department, BOCES, all these parties that are interested in employment and training, if we go into this effort in disagreement, we will come out with something that we don't like. Presently, I was talking to some of our staff on the way up. Bob Adams was pointing out to me that in the North Country, the cuts in Wagner-Peiser money, which is basically the federal money that funds other job service, has been cut so much more dramatically than the veterans money that we have many community service centers, which are our local offices, in the North Country, where in the North Country as a whole, the DVOPs and leavers make up more than 50% of the staff in the offices. What that's going to mean in the long run is that those offices aren't going to be able to continue. We're already down to the point, some places in the southern tier and in the North Country where it's a more rural area, where our Wagner-Peiser funded positions are less than 2 per community service center. It's just not a viable system. We're at the point where we're not going to, where if one's on vacation and the other one's sick, we're going to have to close the office for the day, and that can't continue. So where does the veterans' interest fall in this? I think what it means at both the national level, with the workforce development bill that's being conferenced right now in both houses of Congress, there's ups and downs to it. They've been doing it for about 2 months now. There's about a 50-50 chance that we'll see it this year. If we don't, then what we'll see is just cut across the board cuts and even more damage done than we have now. But what we need to see in that workforce development bill, and then in whatever follows in the state, is a collaborative effort. We've got to be sitting down talking with every group to figure out how we can make things work before we go to the legislature. Otherwise, I don't know how things can work. I really don't. When we talk about the system now and how it works and the veterans' priority in the community service centers, the days are going where a job order is a piece of paper, and where we can carry that job order into the community service center and we say, before we give this to the job service staff, we have to hand it to the DVOP and the leaver so they can have it for 2 days. That system, we're not going to be able to afford to run the system that way. We don't have the people. I expect that unemployment insurance within a year and a half or so will be moving that out of the offices completely. We already do follow-up claims on telephone. We will be, in my opinion, within a year and a half or 2 years, we'll probably go into initial claims on telephone. That's going to make those offices even less viable because the cross-training that we've done between UI and job service staff is no longer going to be applicable either. So as we move into the quick links, the job banks, the talent banks, all of these other things that we are going to have to do. There isn't any question about it. We're going to have to do it in order to remain viable. We need your help in working with us to let us know what level is going to be acceptable here. What agreements are we going to be able to arrive at in order to make the needed veteran services be able to survive the changes that are taking place, the cuts that are taking place. The message that I preach when I go out to talk to groups of employees inside the Department of Labor, and I do it with some frequency, they've been around a long time, most of them. I talk to groups that I know, there's no one less with less than 20 years service, and here I am with 1 year. And I tell them, I say, I see the look in your eyes. You're saying, I've outlasted 6 executive deputy commissioners, and I'm going to outlast you too. So, and that's just going to be the way it is. And I tell them, maybe not this time. The changes are profound this time. Before, they've just been cuts, across the board cuts. That's a whole different thing to deal with than a different system. So my message here is somewhat the same. Let's work together, and let's not come to the point after the federal legislation passes where you're going to be in opposition to, let's say, the counties who are trying to put together a system with the pass-through money, however it's going to work. Let's make sure that we put something together that can ensure that the veterans' priorities stand and that the veterans' services that are outlined in this document, all the things that we offer now, that we can continue to offer in the new system. Be glad to take any questions. I know I digressed completely from, but I did so because of a recognized conversation beforehand.
We'll start with Gary.
Mr. Dillon, I have a question first, and then I have a comment that I'd like to have you consider. Wagner Pfizer, is that what you said?
Wagner Pfizer, yeah.
Is that private money?
No, it's federal money.
It's a federal project.
It's federal money that funds the job service.
At our last meeting, we had 3 officers from the New York State National Guard come in and give us a briefing on how critical the recruiting effort is and how people are leaving New York State and going into other states to join the reserves and National Guards because of the opportunity for educational enhancement. A comment that I would offer as a suggestion to you is a possibility of co-locating to save funds with maybe some of your DVOP people into the reserves or National Guard recruiting offices. You know, we're one big military family, mm-hmm. and they're looking for people to go into the Guard and Reserve, and perhaps if somebody was out for one day, you wouldn't close that office because you'd have the reserve or National Guard recruiter. So I just offer that as a suggestion, as something you might want to look at.
Surely, co-location and outstationing is going to be a major part of whatever new system that we see. If we have to close an office somewhere, the political pressure against doing that right now is to say, now my constituents are going to have to drive 50 miles to the next office. We understand that we can't just do that, particularly as we get in the more rural areas. But co-location and outstationing is a way around that, where we have someone 3 days a week, 2 days a week, or whatever, with another entity that's involved in the same type activities that we are, or has an interest in those activities. And surely we're going to look at any reasonable suggestions, of which yours is among them, certainly that co-location can get us out of our problems somewhat, can make our system as efficient as it is now without the manpower, because we're definitely not going to have the manpower.
And the recruiting offices are staffed and computerized now, where you can share the equipment. You know, I recruited for many years up in the Plattsburgh area, and I had, you know, outstations in Malone and Saranac Lake, and I would love to have somebody there the 3 days that I wasn't there and share that.
Systems integration is another important part of it. We have to have systems that know what each other are doing. We're looking into that now. We're looking into a few pilot projects to do some systems integration at a few areas around the state. And if a person, and I'll just use as an example, if a person comes in and applies for welfare, that the person at the social services office doing the intake should have access to other information. They should not just either stamp this person accepted or rejected and send them out. They should know, there should be case management files that show. There are so many other things. There are TAP and Pell eligibility. There are programs being run by community colleges. They should be able to tell from their own intake whether this person is a veteran and what preferences and priorities are offered them through that status. Rather than just asking for the information that affects your own program and making a determination based on that.
One one final question. On the SEEP program,
yes.
Do you work also with Social Security Disability as far as them being able to draw their...
No, what the SEEP program is specifically, the self-employment program, there is money set aside out of the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. Claimants are profiled to determine whether they are likely to exhaust benefits when they come in and collect, when they come in to apply for benefits. If they're eligible, they are profiled. If they are profiled to be likely to exhaust benefits, in other words, to use the full 26 weeks of benefits, they're eligible to apply for the self-employment program. Over a third, we have 1,000 people in it right now, and over a third of them are veterans. What it does, it allows you to collect your unemployment insurance without being available for work, provided that you're starting your own business. We determined, of course, it's a legislative program, but we were the ones that were charged with setting it up, and the legislature and ourselves have determined that that is not an adverse effect on employers or on the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund because the people were profiled to exhaust anyway. We've got a couple of real notable success stories already in just less than a year. We have one business that has 12 employees already that started from the self-employment program.
The reason I ask you that question is I heard a veteran talking the other day that wanted to start his own business but was on Social Security Disability. Mm-hmm. And they told him that if he started his own business, they would take him off that. And he felt that he had to pass on that and work under the table.
Yeah, that's federal as opposed to state. And what we're dealing with here is strictly unemployment insurance money and maintaining the eligibility for unemployment insurance. So you have to be eligible for unemployment insurance to begin with in order to apply for the SEEP program.
Okay, thank you.
Rick?
If I may. I think it's reflective of the stance of this council towards the various elements of the system that NIATEP, or New York State Association of Training Employment Professionals, two different heads of service delivery areas, and the State Association of the Counties and the AFL-CIO were all invited to appear here today. None of them chose to do so. And I think that points up why some of the veterans organizations go and push for centralized control, because the response in many cases does not seem to be there when the system is diffuse in terms of power centers, Mr. Dillon. So I think I just wanted to let you know that the problem with things like the policy framework is I just got a chance to look over the folks participating, many of whom I happen to know. With the exception of you, I don't think anybody would mention the V word or the word veteran and veteran's preference and in any place in this if someone did not prompt it, with the possible exception of Thomas Roderick. And that's the problem, is that folks like Dave Dahlner, who I believe to be a very decent guy and very capable man, and who's come to many of our meetings of the council on behalf of labor, may not be included in the key policy discussions that set up the framework in such a way that veterans have the opportunity to achieve their fair share of that reconfigured pie of services. I don't know if I'm making any sense in that.
Sure.
And I wondered if you could comment on that and the proposals that this council has backed for the strengthening and broadening of Chapter 553 to ensure that it applies across the board and therefore allows the Division of Veterans Affairs and the Commissioner of Labor, I might add, much more input, if you will, into the various other elements of the system, more influence with the other partners, if you will.
Well, I think if you've been following the governor's statements on employment and training and on the consolidation of employment and training, the Department of Labor has already started assimilating staff from Department of Social Services. Mm-hmm. We've already had the staff of the Job Training Partnership Council move from DED to the Department of Labor. You will likely see a push for workforce development boards as the federal legislation moves on. I'm sure you're aware now that the that PICs have a requirement to have veteran representation. You're going to see, in my opinion, the Department of Labor at the state level, the New York State Department of Labor, be the oversight authority for the new workforce development system. The reason that I'm being careful about this, and the reason that I'm selling this as a discussion document, this is a starting point, is that my stated belief here that if we start arguing among ourselves, we're going to end up with something ugly. With the Department of Labor being an oversight authority, that's going to require, because I think the federal legislation will require certain outcomes-based measurement. We're looking toward wage reporting in the state to be a valuable tool for that. We had the first bill passed last year, as you know. We're hoping for the second one now, where we can use that to, in fact, track someone's progress as they come through a program, no matter whose program it is. We are going to ensure in our oversight role that the laws are complied with for anybody who's involved with that system. We make that pledge. Now, with regard to the expansions that you talk about, I have to give some qualified support for a specific reason. Just like with this, I want to make sure that we do something that can work. I don't want to get involved in anything, whether it's in the wider workforce development system or in the narrower relationships that we're talking about here. I don't want to get involved in anything that collapses of its own weight through lack of funding. Lack of funding can result in lack of teeth too. Certainly, what we're looking at with the federal government right now. I think part of the reason for the block grants is the fact that the reduced staffing at the federal level, particularly in the employment and training programs, makes it very difficult. I've only been up there a year, but I understand we're not facing the number of audits that we've faced before. You can't do it. So after a while, it becomes, where are the teeth here? What can someone get away with within the system when they're faced with the pressures of reduced funding, and how can they keep their programs operating? So whatever we do here, we have to do with keeping that in mind. Is this requirement enforceable? And I think we better make sure that whatever we do is in fact enforceable. I think personally that we can maintain the veterans' priority and the veterans' services that we do now within the system. I think at the very least, because we are looking at a much smaller system, we can certainly keep the percentages of effort up. But we in the department as a whole are faced. We don't do the one-on-one that we used to. We don't have 12,000 people anymore. We can't do the one-on-one that we're used to doing. But I also believe that when I forget who brought up, I think it was you, when you talked about centralized effort, I don't believe separating yourself is the way to go. I think that could really entail some problems for you down the line if that's what you were talking about. I think it's necessary to stay involved in the larger system as it moves forward and stay current with it. You can't stay in the world of the paper. And as the systems get integrated and move forward, I think it's important to stay part of that in order to maintain the veterans' preference and the veterans' service.
I could ask a lot of other questions, but I will forego. Thank you very much, Jim.
If you'd like to at some other time, feel free. Give me a call. I'd be glad to get together and certainly.
Well, I take diuretics. I take LASIX. I was in a dental chair yesterday.
A consumer for the veteran with Miss Peggy A. Jones. Welcome, Miss Jones. Miss Jones? Excuse me? All right. Got the book?
Yes.
Hey, hold on to it. Please.
Hi, my name is Peggy Jones. I sit here and I hear your education,
Peggy,
and your training.
You're going to have to pull that microphone a little closer, please, ma'am.
The education and training is not the problem. It's what's after, what's your employment. Now, I have the training. I have the education. For veterans out here, when you go for a job and it's a veteran's preference, they don't have it. They put a non-veteran in before you. And especially being a single parent, it's very difficult to keep going. And then if you go get a job, he's either at McDonald's, Burger King's. And I'm not looking for a job like that, even though that's the place to start. But with the education and the training and the military background I have, I shouldn't have to go through all that. And it's a big problem. You have your education, you have your training. You just doesn't have the employment. And employment for veterans is very difficult to find.
What is your military background?
I have 7 years in the military. I'm a supply specialist, supply sergeant, personnel management sergeant. Yeah.
And you're out now?
I'm out now, yeah. I've been out since 1987.
And who have you applied for as far as positions?
Excuse me?
You say you've applied for positions in government?
I applied in the government. I even applied when I first moved to Albany for the VA hospital. I had two non-veterans take the position before I even was even accepted.
At the VA hospital?
At the VA hospital. I even worked there through a temp agency, and I applied for a position. And someone off the street got the position before they even called me and said the position was filled.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that?